welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and this is The New World Next Week. This is episode 148, our weekly video series that gives you some of the best and most important developments going on in the world of alternative news and open source intelligence. James will begin with an important story this week that, gosh, I guess we must have missed it while we were all changing our Facebook photos to pink equal signs, but Monsanto Protection Act slips silently through the U.S. Congress, and we'll grab this from Russia Today. The U.S. House of Representatives quietly passed a last-minute addition to the Agricultural Appropriations Bill for 2013 last week, including a provision protecting genetically modified seeds from litigation in the face of health risks. The rider, which is officially known as the Farmer Assurance Provision, has been derided by opponents of biotech lobbying as the Monsanto Protection Act, as it would strip federal courts of the authority to immediately halt the planting and sale of GMO seed crop regardless of any consumer health concerns. The provision, also decried as a biotech rider, should have gone through the Agricultural or Judiciary Committee for review. Instead, no hearings were held, and the piece was evidently unknown to most Democrats, who, of course, hold the majority in the Senate, prior to its approval as part of H.R. 993, that is the short-term funding bill that was approved to avoid a federal government shutdown, that whole boogeyman we've seen over the last several weeks here in the states. Senator John Tester, a Democrat out of Montana, proved to be the lone dissenter to the so-called Monsanto Protection Act, though his proposed amendment to strip the rider from the bill was never put to a vote. As the Washington Times points out, the provision's success is viewed by many as a victory by companies like Syngenta, Cargill, Monsanto, and all the affiliated political action committees that have donated $7.5 million to members of Congress since 2009 and at least $372,000 to members of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Finally, it remains unclear whether the bill's six-month expiration means that this provision will be short-lived. Regardless, Food Democracy Now! Has begun a campaign calling on Obama to veto the continuing resolution spending bill, which seems unlikely as H.R. 933 includes a sweeping amount of government funding. James, I believe as we speak here Wednesday, March 27th in the States, there are a ton of farmers and other folks protesting at the White House right now.
Well, James, let me ask you this. Do you think that this is a particularly surprising development?
Not when you know, if you've followed New World Next Week or any of our respective work, James, that Obama brought in Michael Taylor from Monsanto. A former Monsanto vice president was brought on board by your Change-a-Luya Prince of Peace Prize, Barry Satoru. To what is his position? I forget. I'm just pulling off the top of my head. But basically, a Monsanto guy is now a head FDA guy. So no, none of this is a surprise.
And do you think Obama's going to veto it?
No, because he has Michelle out in front with her organic garden in front of the White House, and that it's all PR.
So what do you think people should do about this?
That's the $64,000 question.
Well, it is, isn't it? Well, here's my own take on this, because, again, I don't think this is surprising in the least. And, isn't it oh so ironic that they threatened the American people with shutting down government? Oh, please don't do that. And use that crisis to pass legislation that it contains a rider like this. Again, business as usual from the critters in Washington, D.C., and so now you have hundreds of thousands of people going to Washington, D.C. to protest what Washington, D.C. is doing with regards to this GMO monstrosities that they're protecting through this legislation. Well, again, business as usual, this is exactly what government is. This is exactly what government does. So I think the only thing that people can proactively and really realistically do in all of this is once again to vote with their forks. You get to choose what you will eat or what you won't eat, and you get to choose what you will spend your money on buying. And once again, if people will make that decision to stop buying this GMO crap and actually buy things from actual farmers markets, etc., then you really can influence this. But if people just want to go to Washington and carry picket signs and hope that some Congress critter is going to listen to you, then, well, good luck with that. I truly hope that's effective, but I truly don't think it will be.
I keep shaking my fist. I keep hitting like, but nothing's happening. Oh, God. James, speaking of growing things, let's move to our second story this week that we get originally from the always amazing Cryptagon.com. Carrie and Karzai bury the hatchet in their Kabul meeting. And I think it's quite important, and this is, for me, what sealed the deal with another great piece from Cryptagon.com, is the sequence of events. And that would be March 10th, 2013. Karzai says Taliban in service to America, meaning that perhaps he's feeling like he's not getting enough of his opium cut. 2 days later, March 12th, over 20 tons of heroin seized in Afghanistan. Could that be Karzai saying, can you hear me now? And finally, the 25th of March, just 2 days ago, John Skull and Bones Carey makes unannounced trip to Afghanistan. So now, from the Associated Press, eager to overcome a bout of bickering, the new Secretary of State, and of course, James, we've gone over this, I believe, before, John Kerry is the fixer brought in whenever the Western Empire needs some help and needs shoring up of its limited hangout exposure. Secretary of State John Kerry and Afghan President Hamid Karzai made a show of unusual unity between their two nations on Monday. The friendly display came as the U.S. military ceded control of its last detention facility in Afghanistan, ending a long-standing irritant in relations. Kerry arrived in the Afghan capital of Kabul on an unannounced visit amid concerns that Karzai may be jeopardizing progress in the war against extremism with anti-American rhetoric. After a private meeting, Kerry said he and Karzai were on the same page on security and reconciliation issues and brushed aside suggestions that relations were in peril. At a joint news conference after their talks, Karzai told reporters that his comments in a nationally televised speech had been misinterpreted by the media. Kerry demurred on that point, but said people sometimes say things in public that reflect ideas they have heard from others but don't necessarily agree with. Quote, we're on the same page. I don't think there is any disagreement between us, and I am very, very comfortable with the president's explanation. End quote, John Skull and Bones Carey. James?
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it? Well, this is clearly a reflection of what's going on with behind-the-scenes politics here, with the 2014 pullout looming. And however that takes place, I'm sure that there will be some sort of ceremonial pullout, but there will still be troops left in the country, just like in Iraq. So we'll see exactly how that develops. But obviously, Karzai comes from a drug-dealing CIA-related family, so he obviously is looking for his cut in all of this, and obviously worried about his position in the country after the U.S. forces pull out as well. So I'm sure he's doing a little bit of his own bickering and dealing on the side here, and that's partially what we saw. But it's interesting that during that last couple of weeks, he was coming out saying all the types of things that we say, like the fact that the U.S. is working with the Taliban to create destabilization, to create the need for the forces to remain, and things like this, the exact types of arguments that I would have put forward. So interesting how the truth slips out in moments like that, but it looks like they've brought him back on side, at least for the time being. They've oiled that squeaky wheel, so we'll see how long this detente lasts. But again, Karzai is probably just here trying to get what he can out of all of this. So we'll continue to follow this, but it looks like business is returning to usual in Kabul, aka Virginia, Langley, Virginia, Mini, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, James, you kind of reminded me. That's what we're on Ground Zero. We call it, it's business as usual in the apocalypse. And actually, we'll include as a related note, we just had on the show last Friday night, which was March 22nd, which folks should know is 322, the Skull and Bones number. We had the one and only Chris Milligan of Trine Day Books on to get into his, you know, plethora of knowledge about 322 Skull and Bones. And like you said, CIA drug running. That's why John Kerry is intimately connected in all of this, because it goes back centuries now.
Right, and also let's not forget that Kerry was the one who covered up the CIA drug running. He did the commission that exposed it in the limited hangout. So he's up to his eyeballs in this, plus the Skull and Bones opium connection. So again, absolutely, there's a lot of connections here.
James, our third and final story this week will take first from Al Jazeera. As the BRICS nations fail to launch a new bank, Leaders from the so-called BRICS, a group of emerging nations, have failed to launch a much-anticipated new development bank to rival Western-dominated institutions like the World Bank. After holding talks in the South African port city of Durban on Wednesday, leaders from Brazil, Russia, India, China, and the host, South Africa, agreed in principle to create a joint infrastructure lender, but said further talks were necessary to finalize the plan. "We are satisfied that the establishment of a new development bank is feasible," said host President Jacob Zuma in remarks that hint at little progress beyond an agreement reached in the Indian capital of New Delhi 1 year ago. "We've decided to enter formal negotiations to establish a BRICS-led new development bank," he added. But officially, leaders had been expected to consider the bank's establishment. However, South Africa and others had hoped to formally launch a $50 billion infrastructure fund at this two-day summit. Now, James, you may be able to shed a little bit of light on this, as well in regards to our related story from the New York Times, as Syria's Assad seeks help from China and other developing nations. He sent an amazing letter addressed to the leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the so-called BRICS groups, at their summit. Is he begging for help, James? Help me out on this.
That appears to be the way they're portraying it anyway, and I think we'll have to see how this develops, because this is right on the back of Putin, who came out just before this BRICS summit saying basically that there needs to be a bigger geopolitical role for the BRICS nations. So he was pushing that side of things, and I think one way that the BRICS would be able to assert their or throw their weight around would be on an issue like Syria, especially because they have two of the five permanent seats at the Security Council. Obviously, there is some political, geopolitical clout there. So we will see if the BRICS ever actually do something like that, do actually form some sort of unified geopolitical front. They did come out with some statements in their Delhi Declaration last year, so we'll see what the summit ends up declaring this year and if that actually makes any difference whatsoever on the geopolitical stage. As for the development bank, it's interesting to me that the big holdout, or what seems to be the big holdout here, is India, who shot down the idea of locating the bank in Shanghai, and they've also apparently shot down a deal that was going to see China contributing $41 billion, three of the others contributing $18 billion, and South Africa contributing $5 billion. For a $100 billion capitalization. Apparently, India shot that down as well, because they're afraid of Chinese influence over the bank. And that's interesting, because obviously this shows the discord that's happening within the group, and obviously China would be, in a way, the big beneficiary from a bank like that, especially if it was ended up being denominated in yuan. They haven't really decided on something like that yet either, but that would be a big sticking point, I imagine. So there is a lot of work to go before a development bank takes off, apparently, and in a way, I think that the West is breathing a collective sigh of relief, because obviously the BRICS do represent a potential threat to the IMF World Bank structure, and as people have pointed out, I mean, another global hegemon is going to be not much better than the existing global hegemon, but at the very least, it's some sort of counterbalance to what's happening right now with NATO and the US and the IMF and the World Bank and all of those hegemons. So, at any rate, it looks like that if this development bank doesn't come together at this summit, I imagine there isn't a lot of momentum behind it. It's already been in development for a year, so if they're going to put it off to the back burner for another year, it shows that the BRICS are either ineffective or are falling apart, which is exactly what the Western media has been touting for so long. So kind of a disappointing result from the BRICS perspective, and we'll see. I mean, we'll still have to see what the final declaration reads like. It hasn't been released at the time that we're recording this, but again, it just goes to show that the BRICS may be more of an illusion than anything else, which a lot of people thought they were all along anyway.
So, James, just in closing here, we'll make reference to and perhaps include one update. We weren't on the air last week with the New World Next Week, but we were going to cover all the situations in Cyprus. So as we speak right now, they are getting ready to reopen the bank. So again, while by the time folks are watching this, the banks in Cyprus will reopen, and they're talking about putting a cap on how much money people can take out. There are also stories that basically all the big money all slipped out during this bank holiday. So a lot of interesting things going on and a lot of things to pay attention to, James.
Too much, as always, but good to have you here to start covering some of it. So we'll leave it there for now. But anyway, thank you again for three great stories.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.